This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, December 14th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll get an update on the situation in Ukraine through the eyes of the Ukrainian-American community based here in the Front Range. Chris Moore will have his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You. And then herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. Then it's the Hightower Lowdown. After that, we'll have an episode 2 of the Water Under Pressure podcast series, courtesy of the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. At 9 a.m., we'll hear about the logistical challenges and realities of holiday travel while in a wheelchair. At 9:30, Doug Gertner will be in the Denver studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Luis Licon.
A winter storm has caused major highway closures in eastern Colorado, including Interstate 70 and 76, because of whiteout conditions and high wind warnings. The National Weather Service advises against driving in the affected areas. The storm also affected Denver International Airport, with 120 departing and arriving flights canceled and 707 departing and arriving flights delayed. The Colorado Department of Transportation advised over Twitter that drivers should plan ahead as icy, snow-packed areas continue throughout Colorado during the evening commute. Blizzard conditions continue with high winds and blowing snow in northern eastern Colorado. The Colorado Air Quality Control Commission is holding 3 days of hearings this week to define its plan to reduce ozone emissions in the state. The hearings will include public input before the commission votes on whether to submit the plan to the Environmental Protection Agency for approval. The environmental advocates say the plan does not move quickly or aggressively enough to address the state's poor air quality. The commission is expected to vote on the plan on Friday. In September, EPA regulators reclassified Colorado's Front Range as a severe violator of federal air quality standards. Denver continues to prepare to receive asylum seekers with no place to go. Juanita Hurtado from KGNU has more.
An unexpected, self-funded influx of migrants has prompted Denver to open emergency shelters, some of them including churches and homeless shelters. City officials began operating the shelters last week after a bus with 100 migrants abruptly arrived in the city. According to the Denver Post, 50 to 100 migrants have been arriving in Denver every day, and over 600 have arrived in recent months. Most of the migrants are Venezuelan, looking to escape the situation their country is experiencing, ranging from political persecution to humanitarian crisis. Many are facing the Title 42 policy that makes them unable to seek asylum within the limits of the U.S. without a sponsor, and have looked for other ways to enter the country. Denver is expecting more migrants in the months to come, and is partnering with non-profit organizations like Annunciation House to meet the needs of the upcoming migrants. Denver shelters are also asking for donations and volunteers. For KGNU, I'm Juanita Hurtado.
A celebratory crowd gathered to watch President Joe Biden sign the Respect for Marriage Act into law yesterday. The new law explicitly protects the right of same-gender and interracial couple to marry and have their marriages recognized nationwide. President Biden said at the event, "This law and the love it defends strikes a blow against hate in all its forms." Environmental advocates are asking the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, to revoke the permits for the Uinta Railway. In addition, environmental activists were in Washington, D.C. to deliver formal letters signed by 750 organizations opposing the efforts to include harmful fossil fuel provisions in the upcoming legislation. The 88-mile railroad would connect oil fields in northern eastern Utah to existing rail lines, allowing for more crude oil to travel by rail across Utah and Colorado. A coalition of activists called Stop the Uinta Basin Railway led a national day of action on Saturday. Organizers worried derailments would cause devastating spills along the Colorado River and on indigenous land. if built, up to 10 trains with 110 rail cars could carry crude oil along the route every day. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, Aspen Public Radio, Haley Zender has more.
An environmental impact statement predicts up to 350,000 barrels of crude oil would travel along the new railroad in northeast Utah every day. Jonathan Godis, the mayor of Glenwood Springs, criticized the limited scope of the study at a protest on Saturday.
The impacts were only considered on the 88 miles from the spot where they're extracting the oil to the mainline. They didn't look at any of the other impacts from that point to the Gulf of Mexico, truly.
Glenwood Springs is one of 10 counties and municipalities in Colorado that signed an amicus brief requesting a court overturn the railway's approval. Protesters hope Vilsack will use his authority to stop the project. Hallie Zander, Aspen Public Radio News.
The United States Army Corps of Engineers has approved a 404 permit allowing the Northern Colorado Water Conservancy District to build two reservoirs for the Northern Integrated Supply Project. Eliza Palazzo from KGNU has more.
The stated objective of the Northern Integrated Supply Project is to supply 15 water providers with a combined 40,000 acre-feet of water yearly for communities along Colorado's Northern Front Range, including Erie, Lafayette, Fort Collins, Loveland, Docano, Frederick, and Firestone. A 404 permit, titled under a section of the Federal Clean Water Act, is an authorization issued by the Corps of Engineers that will allow for the discharge of dredged or fill material into all waters of the United States, including wetlands. Environmental groups and activists have met the project with resistance throughout its planning history, with the group Save the Pooter issuing a statement on Friday saying they plan on filing a lawsuit in response to the federal approval. In regards to other permits and site plan applications, Save the Pooter and other environmental groups are currently suing the Larimer County Commissioners, the City of Fort Collins, and Northern Integrated Supply Project in two other lawsuits. The Corps of Engineers' issuance of the permit is the final approval for Northern Water to start the project, which Northern Water has been planning for almost 20 years and estimates will cost $2 billion. For KGNU, I'm Alyssa Palazzo.
It's going to be a cold day across the Front Range today. Here in Boulder, we're going to see temperatures in the high of 37 and a low of 21, and there's a current temperature of 24 degrees. There's going to be wind gusts up to 14 miles per hour, and cloudy conditions will continue all day. In Fort Collins, we're going to see a high of 37 and a low of 22, with a current temperature of 28 degrees, and windy conditions are expected around 9 in the morning today. And in Denver, we're going to see a high of 39 and a low of 17, with a current temperature of 20 degrees, and cloudy conditions will continue all day with wind gusts up to 9 miles per hour. And these were your morning headlines for KGNU. I am Luis Licon.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Residents of Ukraine's capital city woke up to a series of drone strikes this morning. The missiles reportedly struck two government buildings and several homes just before dawn Wednesday. The strikes follow attacks over the weekend in Odessa. For many in the U.S., this may sound like a world away and fade into the background of BBC News reports. But for people like my guest today, it's the latest in a series of Russian attacks on a country where much of her family lives. Ulana Bohun is part of the Ukrainian and Ukrainian-American community in Boulder County, and she joins me live in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you. Ulana, you are a first-generation Ukrainian-American. You were born and raised in the U.S. to immigrant parents. How close does the war in Ukraine personally affect you and other people who may be one generation removed from living there?
This war in Ukraine has been something that's been ongoing since 2014, as we know, moving all the way back to what's been happening in eastern Ukraine. And our family personally has connections. We have a lot of family and cousins still in Ukraine, mostly in Western Ukraine. However, growing up as a first-generation Ukrainian, we went to Ukrainian school. We had Ukrainian scouting organizations, learned songs, went to Ukrainian church, because at that time we were concerned about independence for Ukraine under the Soviet regime. So maintaining culture, identity, connection with family was a priority for a lot of families of Ukrainian descent. And we're seeing that happening again now with Ukrainians that are coming from Ukraine currently.
So you were mentioning to me prior to going on the air that you wake up regularly to messages from your relatives on the ground in Ukraine. What are they telling you?
So recent text messages have been at that point where they are suggesting that everybody in the country is feeling the war. So it's, you know, defenders on the front lines obviously and clearly are going through so much trauma. But the rest of the country really is suffering as well now with the colder conditions. I mean, here we were in Boulder County at 22 degrees this morning. I was freezing in my car. They have very little energy that they're running. They've got intermittent heat, intermittent water, intermittent internet connection as well. So there's lots of family members that are having a hard time connecting with people. It could be 2 or 3 days before you even know that things are okay. On the flip side, my family and friends that I know in Kyiv as well, they are just consummate optimists that Ukraine will overcome this situation. No matter how hard it gets, their optimism and resilience is something tremendous. I knew that before, and now I just know it even more.
Now, you're part of a local organization known as Sunflower Seeds Ukraine, which seems to be very active in Boulder specifically. Tell listeners a bit about the organization and what it does.
Sunflower Seeds Ukraine, it's a small multinational organization. It's all volunteers. It's headquartered right here in Boulder, Colorado, by a young family who is from Ukraine originally and is committed and has really close connections with people in Ukraine. And what Sunflower Seeds does is it meets needs of specific defenders in different parts of Ukraine. And they have connections in Ukraine. So from this side, we build funding and purchase equipment, medical equipment, optical equipment for the defenders on the front lines, as well as some civilian and humanitarian need that is then directly taken to Ukraine, oftentimes by volunteers who may have an extra suitcase as they're traveling to Germany or Poland, that then is met by people on the border in Ukraine and taken directly to where that need is most in demand.
We've had members of Sunflower Seeds on before as guests, so I know there's a core group of people who were born and raised in Ukraine and still have very close ties to the country, but ended up in Boulder due to school or jobs or marriage or other life circumstances. Did many of the folks in the organization already know each other beforehand, or did the Russian invasion of Ukraine make you all more visible to one another?
Definitely what's happening in Ukraine right now pulled everybody together in a way. We had already had a Ukrainian-American community in Colorado that was rather small, but as soon as the war happened, it was as if everybody's light just turned on and everybody was feeling this need to be able to do something, pretty much anything. And so somehow we all came out of the woodwork, and now we're forging and building another united, you know, diaspora community in Boulder County.
So a question that I think perhaps many people who don't have ties to Ukraine may be asking as the war wears on and continues to be in the news, but not so much with as much urgency as before. What, on a day-to-day level, would Ukrainians lose if they gave in and became part of Russia?
that is not even a possibility for Ukrainians. It's not a possibility for the supporters of Ukraine all over this world. That will not happen. And that resilience and strength in national identity is something that just simply can't be taken away. And so organizations like Sunflower Seeds Ukraine are really, you know, at the forefront. Other organizations in Colorado, Ukrainians of Colorado, Limbs for Liberty, CO4UA, we're all doing everything we can to make sure that will not happen. And for more information about Sunflower Seeds Ukraine, please, if you'd like to, go to www.sunflowerseedsukraine.org. It has more information about this organization, as well as ways you can help.
And if people want to find out a bit more about Ukrainian culture in general, are you organizing, does Sunflower Seeds have any kind of spaces for that? Are you organizing any events in the coming weeks or months?
So Sunflower Seeds Ukraine is working really closely with other organizations in Colorado, like Ukrainians of Colorado. They just had a holiday fair a few weeks ago where you could learn about Ukrainian culture, taste Ukrainian foods. That will be continuing. I am 100% guaranteed of that into 2023. So keep your eyes out. Again, you can check that website, www.sunflowerseedsukraine.org, and oftentimes we'll post local happenings.
Okay. Do you have any, those are my questions. Do you have any final thoughts, Ulana Bihun, just for the listeners in general?
Oh, for the listeners in general, any amount of support or talking about the war, other things that are happening. Remember, it's not just supporting defenders on the front lines right now. It's also supporting everyday citizens who are cold, oftentimes hungry, and needing our support.
My guest today has been Ulana Bihun of Sunflower Seeds Ukraine. Thanks so much for coming into the studio this morning.
Thanks so much for having us. Thank you.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. The lame duck Congress has a lot on their plate, and one bill that passed the House a year ago is now up for Senate consideration. The old H.R. 1603, the Farm Workforce Modernization Act of 2021, to amend the Immigration and Nationality Act to provide for terms and conditions for non-immigrant workers performing agricultural labor or services and for other purposes. There are two sides to this story. The Biden administration and many Democrats support this bill because, quote, this legislation would provide farm workers who are invaluable to our economy and have lived in this country for years, in some cases for decades, an opportunity to earn citizenship. With legal status and a path to citizenship, farm workers would be able to earn higher wages and exercise their rights under our labor laws to demand better working conditions. In turn, businesses that rely on farm workers would have a more reliable and stable workforce, close quote. But according to the advocacy group Why Hunger, here is a long quote from their webpage, quote, the bill claims it will streamline the citizenship process and H-2A worker visa program for farm workers, which will in turn reduce food prices. There have been an abundant number of concerns from farm workers and advocates who warn that passing of the bill will cause more harm than good. Not only will it limit the path to legal status, but also expand the exploitative H-2A program and E-Verify across the entire agriculture industry. Ultimately, the bill will actually increase immigration enforcement and give employers more power over undocumented workers. The passing of the FWMA will put the farm workers community at risk, stating that the majority of the migrant workers in the industry are undocumented. Labor leaders need to be part of the negotiations surrounding this bill to ensure the protection and fair treatment of these essential workers. One of the most harmful narratives being used to push this bill is that it is necessary in order to mitigate labor shortages and lower food costs. Edgar Franks added how this narrative has widely been promoted across media outlets to sway consumers and the public. Edgar shared, production is at an all-time high, even with the COVID pandemic, and there is now enough food to feed two Earths with the production being done right now. So what is driving up food prices? Franks explains it is largely due to climate change. He also calls out big business, price gouging, and corporate greed as major culprits. It has nothing to do with a labor deficit, and corporations should not be allowed to control this narrative any longer. Advocates are calling for heavy revisions to the FWMA before approval, but time is running out. If this bill is passed, it will set back farm workers' rights for generations, close quote. If you have opinions on the Senate version of H.R. 1603, the Farm Workforce Modernization Act of 2021, now before the Senate, you can contact your senators. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars with a few ideas on heart health. One of my dear friends just had a heart attack, and I'm sure you all know people who've been in the same situation. So what do we do to protect our heart? Well, most of us know by now that eating less red meat is a good idea and switching more to fish, which are high in omega-3 fatty acids. And the heart also is really going to have more trouble if we eat a lot of sugar. And I know we might find that curious because sugar doesn't have cholesterol, but sugar actually causes a type of rust to form in the arteries. And that rust is where cholesterol will adhere and cause more problems later. And also the bitter flavor is really good for the heart. Bitter flavor like dandelion greens is a wonderful addition to one's diet. But of course, there are herbs that can help us. And one of my favorites is hawthorn. Hawthorn leaf, flower, and berry has been used for thousands of years by millions of people, as most of these herbal remedies have been. Hawthorn works in several ways. Crataegus species, there's quite a bit of it growing in Colorado. It is an herb that works in several ways. One is that it gradually reduces arterial plaque in the arteries. It also helps to normalize heart rate, and it also helps to strengthen the cardiac force of the heart. It's a very user-friendly herb. However, if you are on heart medicines, maybe you want to consult with a qualified health practitioner. Also, we know that foods that can prevent blood platelet aggregation are really important to add to the diet, and this includes garlic, onions, ginger, cayenne pepper, preferably raw. Eating some of those is going to help prevent blood clots, which could lead to not only a heart attack, but a stroke. There's also a wonderful herb called motherwort, Leonaris cardiaca, that helps to normalize blood pressure. So there's a few, you know, techniques that are good to know about that can help if someone felt like they were having a threatened heart attack. And this is until you get medical attention, because certainly if you think you're having a heart attack, you know what to do, and it's going to be beyond home remedies. But biting down on the sides of your little finger after you've gotten someone to call 911 might really help you by opening up the meridians that correspond to the heart. You bite down on the sides of your little finger and loosen any tight clothing. So I want to say one more thing about hawthorn. It's also good for a broken heart. Hope this gives you some ideas to eat heart healthfully during the holy days. Thanks so much for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Stacy Johnson, Luis Licon, Juanito Hurtado, Alyssa Palazzo, Alexis Kenyon, my guest, Ulana Bihun, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, you can call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for the Hightower Lowdown and then the second installment of the Water Under Pressure podcast from the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. After that, we'll have a half hour on what it's like to travel during the holidays while in a wheelchair. All of that's coming up after the news headlines from the BBC, but first, these messages.